Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. What's going on in the world, especially over in the Middle East, especially in Palestine, especially in Gaza? There's lots more besides that. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it as much as we can get into the hour. I'm delighted to have Rodney Shakespeare back. Rodney is a professor of binary economics at Trisakti University. He teaches postgraduate Islamic economics and finance. He's also a qualified UK barrister. He's co-founder of the Global Justice Movement. He's a distinguished writer, scholar, lecturer, especially at Islamic conferences on money, the real economy, and social and economic justice. And Rodney's been on this program a number of times. We always feature important topics, and Rodney is right on the money in what he has to say to listeners. Rodney, I welcome you. We had a little bit of a ragged start. Things are kind of rough in New York. That's the reason. Transportation is a mess, even a few weeks after Hurricane Sandy. And it is not very pleasant living in New York City right now. So the trains aren't running right, and people in a lot of communities are really, really going through some very hard times. I haven't checked in the last 4 or 5 days, but the last time I checked, something like 800,000 people in the general area, in the New York area, besides New Jersey, wherever, just in the New York area, still did not have power back. So no heat, no light. I don't know how many haven't got power back now, but it's still a mess. So we're lucky to be on here and only miss a minute of the program. I would say that that's quite an achievement.
Yeah, indeed, an achievement. And with winter coming, there's going to be a lot of misery up in the New York area. Now, you've made one mistake, Steve. You said that I was always sort of on the money. Well, on a previous program, I was not. And if I could just start by correcting an error.
Oh, absolutely.
I referred to a remarkable PowerPoint presentation by Dmitry Orlov. And I said that you could no longer find it on the internet because Dmitry was now writing a book, and obviously the publishers were trying to get sort of information away so that you could just buy the book. Well, it's still there. The PowerPoint is there, and your viewers, your patient viewers on this matter, they only have to Google closing the collapse gap. Closing the collapse gap. And that will bring up this most remarkable analysis of the situation of the Soviet Union just before its collapse, a comparison with America in 2006. I have to say, it's astonishingly accurate and topical. Virtually all of it applies in 2012 as it does in 2006. Now, Stephen, I stop there because there are big matters to be dealt with, and I think that the one we ought to go straight at is the organized murder which is going on in Gaza. And I have to say that the Israelis are showing themselves as the world's biggest murderers. They do it directly, or they do it by manipulating American policy openly, because American foreign policy is murderous, or they do it covertly. And the fact of the matter is, the chances must be high, if you've got to pin a responsibility on America or Israel for 9/11, I think that the balance of probability will be that 3,000 people were on balance murdered more by the Israelis than they were murdered by Dick Cheney and the little groups, the secret groups, which he organized. It was possibly at 9/11 the buildings were brought down by a direct ray of some weapon of some sort, because they went into powder, and cars 150 yards away were exhibiting the consequences, bursting into flames for no reason at all. That was some sort of ray. In the case of tower number 11, the place was simply blown up. The BBC reporting they'd been blown up half an hour before it was. Steve, we are looking at murderers. Murderers in the straightforward, and they do it themselves. They are Nazi murderers. they are behaving exactly like the Nazis, with the arrogance which says they can kill anybody else because other people are subhuman and aren't as human as they. It's exactly the same psychology as it is of the Nazis. I stop there because, I mean, at this very moment, we're seeing ghastly things going on in Gaza, and very obviously, this is the start of Operation, what it's called, a Pillar of Cloud, isn't it?
Yes.
A sort of Zionist reference to the Old Testament is going on, and it's part of a periodic genocide aimed at getting rid of all the peoples out of Palestine so that there can be a Zionist state from the east side of the Mediterranean across to the Tigris Euphrates. And they're at it all the time, as much as they can in the particular circumstances. But it's quite shocking what is going on. It is even more shocking that Obama, who's a pusillanimous, cowardly creature, he's been elected for the second time. He doesn't actually have to crawl to the Israelis. He hasn't got the slightest guts to stand up and say that he is disgusted. And all decent people are disgusted by what's going on.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly, Rodney. I share your furor. There is no question what's going on. The most obvious thing that people should understand is this is a very sophisticated military campaign that Israel is conducting. Military campaigns like this take months to plan. Months to plan. Operation Pillar of Cloud, it's got a couple of other names I've seen on the internet, I've mentioned them, comes right out of the book of Exodus. I was looking for the quote that I used in one of my articles, couldn't spot it immediately, but right out of the book of Exodus. So Israel pulls these code names for military operations. Well, America does the same thing. The name doesn't mean anything, it's the policy. It means something. And this is naked aggression. This is cold-blooded murder, assassination. There are so many ugly themes to this attack, Rodney. I want to explain to listeners official Israeli policy called Dahiya. But let me mention one thing ahead of that. The man that Israel murdered, which was really the spark that set this thing off, but it wasn't the first killing that Israel did before Hamas and other resistance groups respond. Number one, key point. Hamas and the other resistance groups never, never initiate conflict by launching rockets or mortars or anything else. They respond after multiple Israeli provocations, attacks, killing innocent civilians. Israel deliberately does this to get Hamas and the others to respond so they can blame them, so Israel can launch whatever it has in mind. It could be a day or two of bombing. It could be a major event like this. It could be cast lead at the end of December 2008, January 2009. There's a real threat, and I think very strong possibility, we see cast lead 2.0 coming that could be longer and more ferocious than the first one, and the first one was horrific. But killing this head of the Hamas military wing, the Qassam Brigades, he was also very politically influential. He was working with the Israelis just hours or a day or so before his assassination. He had a draft copy in his hand of a truce agreement with provisions in it that if there were any flare-ups, there were things both sides would initiate to cool them down and stop them in their tracks. In other words, there was a peace agreement on the table to assure peace and stability and end future conflicts. And the one thing Israel didn't want, Rodney, is peace and stability. That defeats their entire imperial agenda. They need violence.
Stephen.
They need conflict. Go ahead.
They assassinated him because there was an agreement made, and they do not want an agreement. You know full well that Israel does not have fixed borders. It is, in fact, like a sort of a ghastly fungus or microorganism which is expanding all the time. It wants no agreement. And when these Israelis stand up and tell lies and say, oh, the Palestinians are attacking, one wants to ask them one question. What are the borders that you propose for an independent Palestine? And you won't get an answer. Hamas has given the answer. they are prepared to settle, as indeed Obama apparently has said, I'll settle on the 1967 borders. But Israel has no intention. And that is why the Hamas commander was assassinated, not just to start the war, but as you've correctly pointed out, to stop the agreement. Stephen, over 18 months ago, there was America demanding of Iran that it agree to export all its uranium rods and have them turn into 20% and then sent back. And Obama put it in writing to the president of Brazil. The president of Brazil negotiated the agreement with Iran and Turkey. In other words, gave the Americans exactly what they had asked for. And then immediately, America turns around and torpedoes the question, because they're not after the question of the atomic matter with Iran. They want regime change. In other words, a deliberate, dirty tricks betrayal by Obama. And here you've got Israel, an agreement probably, almost certainly was going to be accepted, and immediately you get what apparently everybody thinks they want, and these bastards, they deliberately assassinate the man so that the agreement could not take place in reality. One quick last point, Stephen. I happen to have found that quote on Exodus. It comes from an article by one called Stephen Lenman, and it says this, "And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire, to give them the light to go by day and night." What a cynical piece name-mongering to use, call this pillar of cloud. You look at that quotation, and it's clearly they are boasting that they're going to put their dirty white phosphorus all round the sky. They're going to burn to pieces the children and women. And have you noticed, you probably have, that three-quarters of the wounded and the dead are women and children. Yes. These bastards are doing that, Stephen. And that quotation tells you what they're going to do. Phosphorus, illegal under international law, they are going to pour that all over Gaza. And I've got other things to say, Stephen, but you go next.
Well, I want to explain what Dahiya is and what it means. That is very key to Israel's war strategy. Israel has a doctrine that it calls Dahiya. Dahiya is a town in Lebanon. Israel destroyed it in the 2006 war. And I quoted Israeli generals explaining, in effect, what Dahiya means. Dahiya is a Beirut suburb. I said that right. It's a Beirut suburb, and Israel destroyed it in the 2006 Lebanon War. The former general who led the 2006 campaign, Gabi Eisenkot, if I'm pronouncing his name right, here's what he said, quote, "What happened in the Dahiya quarter of Beirut in 2006 will happen in every village from which Israel is fired on. We will apply disproportionate force at the heart of the enemy's weak spot, civilians, and cause great damage and destruction. From our standpoint, these are not civilian villages, towns, or cities. These are military bases. This is not a recommendation. This is a plan, and it has been approved." And there were other generals who said the same thing. The former chief of staff, Dan Halutz, said, "The idea is to use enough disproportionate force to inflict damage and mete out punishment to an extent that will demand long and expensive reconstruction processes. With the outbreak of hostilities, the IDF will need to act immediately, decisively, and with force that is disproportionate to the enemy's actions and the threat it poses." It goes on and on, Rodney. And basically it says Israel will target an enemy's weak spots, namely civilians. They can set as military sources or targets, whatever Israel wants to call it. And what have they attacked? In the Lebanon War, in Kaslev, they attacked agricultural stores, hospitals, mosques, schools, universities, a radio station, fishermen at sea, Gaza's farmers in their fields, children at school.
I don't think the Nazis did this. Did the Nazis always go at the universities and the agricultural stores? I think you actually look at the detail of it, Stephen, and I think that these Zionists are worse than the Nazis when you look at what they're actually doing.
It really seems that way, Ronnie. It really seems that way. But they basically act the same way. And I think it's very fair to say that Arabs today in the region close to Israel are today's Jews. What Jews were to the Nazis in the 1930s, 1940s, Arabs are to the Jews in the Middle East, at least around Israel and Palestine, and wherever Israel can get its dirty paws on and attack somebody, be it in Lebanon, the wars that's waged in the past, whatever it has in mind in the future. Who knows what Israel has in mind in the future? They absolutely want a regime change in Syria. They just don't want a radical regime replacing Assad. And they absolutely want to replace the regime in Iran. And the idea, as you said, Rodney, has nothing to do with Iran's nuclear program. Everybody knows it's a peaceful program. U.S. intelligence says it every single year. There is no nuclear weapons program. So it's no secret. The secret is they want to get rid of an independent government, the same thing in Syria, same thing in Iraq, same thing in Afghanistan, same thing in Libya, same scheme over and over again to put in pro-Western puppets. That's what's going on.
Yes. Now, listen, you've touched on certain matters, and there's so much of this. First of all, on Syria, if you put your arms and your money into the hands of Salafists and Jihadists, as has been happening in Syria, then you are actually creating something, creating blowback, and it's quite likely that if, in fact, the American, Zionist, Saudi, Turkish strategy succeeds, you will end up in Syria with a regime which will be more violent and more aggressive than you, even something like the Taliban or Al-Qaeda is itself. Because they are violent people whose aims ultimately is to attack everybody. And that blowback will go right the way back into Saudi Arabia itself and into Turkey. I've got no sympathy for Saudi Arabia, and I've no sympathy for Turkey. The Turkeys, who've been bribed by NATO, saying, oh, you'll be the big man in the Middle East if you come in with us. But the Turks are in fact shooting themselves in the foot. So there's a little comment in response of Syria. But now I want to go on to a big matter here. There is one country and one leader in a position to make a historical step. The only trouble is he's known as Rubber Dub, and he hasn't probably got the moral courage. I can start by being charitable and say that President Morsi of Egypt, when he came into power, he didn't come into power. He had no power at all. The real power was in the hands of the army. But first, he did manage to succeed in getting rid of General Tantawi. And secondly, it's become clear that he is now establishing power in Egypt. But he could massively increase his power by one particular move. If he decides to have the guts to take his power from the street, not just the street of Egypt, but from the street of the whole of the Arab Middle East. And he can do it quite simply. It's disgraceful that the Rafah crossing is only conditionally open here and there. It should have been opened permanently since the day he was there. Number one, he should open the Rafah crossing for all medical and for all refugees, and in particular, the leaders maybe of Hafah, who are going to, of Gaza, are going to be hounded down by the Israelis. But anyone should be allowed across to take sanctuary. And thirdly, there should be food and in particular water going across. At the same time, the Egyptian army has been sitting on its backside doing nothing except suppressing Egyptians for the last 50 years. It should get off its backside and say it will not stand for an invasion of Gaza. Now, if Morsi does this, he will become the most powerful leader in the Arab world. But the trouble is that Morsi, although he's Muslim Brotherhood, and although there are elements of Muslim Brotherhood policy which do have concern for the bulk of people, the psychology is really that of patronage and charity and no deep desire to forward the interests of the bulk of the people. And so I think that Morsi is going to hash this opportunity. He should take the lead. And if he does, he will be backed by Tunisia. He will be, have to be backed by the Libyans, because the people will demand it. As for Yemen, there will probably be a revolution in Yemen. The situation in Jordan will immediately speed up. Hope will be given to decent people in Syria. All the way round, positions will be stabilized, and we will last see a turn in what is happening in the Middle East. Because, you see, America and Israel are completely now contradicting themselves. On the one hand, you know, they're saying this, on the one hand, they're doing that. It is a wonderful situation for a big, simple lead to come from President Morsi of Egypt. Alas, Stephen, I don't think it's going to happen. But that's the weakness of Morsi.
I don't think it'll happen either, but it would be a magnificent step. You know, if he did that, Rodney, he literally would be putting, risking his life on the line for it. But I can't think of a more extraordinary thing to do. I've been waiting for the time when Israel and America both, Rodney, would simply overstep and literally for real end up shooting themselves in the foot. It's one thing to do it by waging a war you can't win. America hasn't won a war since World War II, but America still has the military might to go around the world ravaging one country after another. I want to see America stopped in its tracks, where it literally comes up against something it can't contend with, and it pays very, very dearly as a result. Literally turns it on a downward spiral to end this militarism and imperialism. Israel would be easy to do because it's a much smaller country. It's powerful. It's got nuclear weapons. But it's in the Arab world. If one Arab leader, and Morsi would be the one, Egypt is the most significant Arab country. If Morsi did it, he'd be another Nasser. He would be a heroic figure across the region. He would risk his life, but what a risk worth taking. If I was Morsi, I say this categorically, if I was Morsi, Mohammed, if you want me to take over for you, I will do it proudly, and I will do what Rodney suggested, and I will put my life on the line, and if Israel kills me, I can't think of a better way to go than that. That would be an amazing thing to do, and you could literally bring the Israeli war machine to a halt, because the rest of the Arab world might in some way, to some degree, jump in with this. And if the tide got rolling enough, Rodney, I think you're suggesting, and I think I agree, if it got rolling enough, with enough force, then the Israeli war machine is over.
Yes, you're quite right in saying that he would be putting his life on the line. And those that do these assassinations are often far from reasonable. But if they did assassinate the Morsi after he'd done what's being suggested, the consequences would actually be absolutely huge. And this situation is not where you can put a Sadr in place of a Nasser and then end up with a Mubarak. The way now, right the way throughout the Middle East, is any sort of nasty assassinations of a major leader like that will not lead to repression and more military takeovers. It will lead immediately to a huge, massive increase in the pro-democracy movements. An assassination of, shall we say, Morsi, after he had done this, would immediately result, I would suggest, in a further stage of the revolution in Yemen, in Jordan. Saudi Arabia, you know, is never a united country. It's got about four parts. So those who would assassinate Morsi would definitely end up with a situation which would be worse. Just assassinating Morsi will not help them. That said, I do accept that those who assassinate are not necessarily clear thinkers. And it's all very well for, say, myself to propose it and to put Morsi's life at risk. But at some point, somebody has to take the lead. Somebody has to see what the opportunity is. And, well, let's just cross our fingers and hope that something big will, in fact, happen.
Oh, it would
all
be magnificent.
The factors are there. All the countries are getting ready. Oh, they're all angry. And but you're getting ridiculous things which are happening. The only thing which will sort it all out is a major lead coming from Egypt.
Well, again, I agree, Rodney. If Morsi did something like this and was assassinated, the fingers obviously would point to Israel. I think there would be uprisings across the region that would go well beyond street protests. I think there would be real Israeli-directed violence. There would be great demands placed on the leaders of countries across the region that you have to do something about this. I mean, ferocious demands where leaders simply could not back off and just talk the talk and do nothing. I think something would have to happen. I think this would be a major mistake by Israel, compounding the mistake they made with a much bigger mistake. I want to see something happen that literally could lead to the downfall of Israel. It's a cancer on the region. It's a cancer on Jewish people in Israel and across the world. It's a malignancy. Zionism is a disease. It's not a religion. It's got nothing to do with basic religious tenets, be they Judaic or Muslim or Christian. It's a cancer. It destroys everything it touches. It's been a while, but I wrote several times about Zionism, Rodney, and it's very obvious what it favors. It didn't have to go that way if you go back a century, but it shows the violent path. It could have been very conciliatory and just promoted the idea of, you know, Jews are people and they have rights too. Nobody can argue with that. But when Jews prioritize their rights at the expense of other people and wage wars and kill people and commit endless violence against non-Jews, well, that's a disease that has to be targeted. Rodney, I want to let you jump in as soon as we come back from break. I know you have a lot more in your mind. We'll take a short break and then we'll come right back. Shakespeare, talking an awful lot about Gaza. There's so much else going on, but Gaza is such a major story. Rodney, just one quick comment, then you jump in. Literally, I've been writing daily since this thing began. And my email to you before the program began, I think I said I've written 5 articles. I've gotten 5 articles out. I've got a 6th one I'll get out tomorrow. But as I go to bed at night and I wake up in the morning, I have nothing about the invasion began in any of my articles. And I'm wondering whether maybe overnight the invasion began. And I'm going to have to do a quick addition to my article to explain the troops cross the border. They are marshaled, mobilized on the border right now. Literally, an invasion could happen any time.
Yes, they are marshaled. You're looking at looks like several hundred tanks, as far as I can see, what's there, and they are probably going to go in and have a massacre. Now, Stephen, there's just one thing: it's that Zionism is not just the issue, and there are the connections, and the connections go much more widely. And another way of looking at the scene is that it is profoundly anti-democratic forces, of which the United Kingdom and America are, in fact, the major causes. This morning I was privileged to be on an Arab program, and a quotation was read out, and it was from one of the ministers of the Al-Makila Khalifa regime in Bahrain. And he was saying that the human rights campaign in Bahrain was really a colonialist attack on the regime. They viewed human rights as being part of a colonialist attack on that corrupt, feudal, thieving, torturing, murderous regime. Now, if you look at that regime, it is Sunni, and yet they've not said a word or done anything to help Hamas in Gaza, virtually all of whom are also Sunni. And so you see, the Khalifas who play the sectarian card, they only play it when it suits them to serve the interests of preserving their corrupt, vicious, thieving, a perverted regime. So the wider issue is ultimately a democracy, because the Zionists do not want to give a democracy to the subhuman creatures who are called Arabs. Americans do not want to give democracy to at least nearly half their own population, who they just say that they must just rot if they can't get a job in circumstances where, frankly, your debt is so high and your military spending is so high. There is no economic democracy in the USA, Stephen. The Saudis don't wish to give democracy. Jordan doesn't want to give democracy. There's some doubt in my mind about Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood who do want to give democracy. You go around all these countries and all these regimes, and it's becoming pretty clear that the one thing that all of them are trying to prevent is, in fact, democracy. They talk about democracy at various times in their history and open up the vote, shall we say, to another few percent of the population. But true democracy, which should in fact be the case today, where we provide everybody with a productive capacity so that they have an income, so that producers and consumers can be the same people. There's simply no understanding of that. And the United Kingdom and USA are the worst in this respect, because they have a sort of name for democracy, but it no longer has any reason. So I look at Zionism. Ultimately, it's bad in itself and what it's doing in the Middle East, what it's doing to try and smash up, but it is ultimately part of an interconnected structures, all of which are out, which are racist, because they believe that Arabs can't be trusted with any sort of free will or any form of economic democracy or political democracy. It is racist, it is anti-democratic, and it is not a true market economics. Now, I put all that against Israel, but I put it against the USA and the UK as well. And I think, Stephen, that this angle that I am putting forward now is the one which is going to come forward increasingly. Israel is being exposed now. People are utterly sick of it. They can shut down press TV as much as they like, but it's amazing how the news and the information is getting out there. But the wider issue is whether you in fact truly want to forward a decent democracy. You know, in the Middle East they have modern market, private property, democratic Islamic societies, and not to be scared of them, because behind the USA policy and the UK policy is in fact a nasty racialism aimed at Arabs and aimed, it's a sort of whatever the word for racialism against Muslims is, I'm not sure, but whatever it is, is it Islamophobia? I don't know, but it is a sort of a racist phobic position, and it's, I would say, that anti-democracy is more of its characteristic, even more than Zionism. What do you say?
Well, I agree with all that you say, and it really is a horror. And the good news in America, Rodney, is it's moving incrementally, not fast enough.
Yes.
But based on the TV ratings in America and the fact that publications, the scoundrel publications, the corporate
yes.
publications, they're losing readership.
Yes.
People, well, of course, we have hard times here, so people are saving as they can. But there have been a number of publications that have gone out of business. My own Chicago Tribune, that's been around for I don't know how
really?
Many decades, it's still operating, but it's bankrupt. The New York Times is practically bankrupt. I think the Philadelphia Inquirer went bankrupt, Los Angeles Times. There have been a number of others. They still keep operating somehow. I don't know how. If you're bankrupt, I don't know where the money is coming from, but people aren't reading them. They're tuning out. Part of it is the Times. Another part of it is you can get stuff on the internet free, so why buy a newspaper? But TV ratings are going down. TV news has seen their ratings continually fall slowly. And before, I think Fox News was the number one source that people turned to for so-called news in America. What they expected to see, I can't imagine, because there is no news on Fox, but there is no news on CNN and CBS and NBC and the whole lot of them. If anybody, and the New York Times, New York Times gives you a little bit here or there. Once in a while, something good shows up, but it's the exception, not the rule. It's very pro-imperial, very pro-power, very pro the privileged people in America and the world, and very anti-ordinary people. So that's the agenda that these people endorse. And whenever America goes to war, the major media, the scoundrel media, line up in lockstep, and they support Israel right down the line, all of its crimes. I have a field day, Rodney, doing media critiques, and I like to go at the New York Times because it has global reach. It's the most influential publication worldwide. So I want to take them down mainly, but I'll go at others too. I'll go at my own Chicago Tribune, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, go after individual writers, and I do this all the time. I did a media critique today on how the media covers for Israel, makes excuses for Israel. It's outrageous. There are such outlandish crimes being committed, and the party line, it's like everybody gets the script, and they pick it up, and they read the lines. Everybody reads the same lines. Gaza is a terrorist organization. I'm sorry, Hamas is a terrorist organization, and they started this, and Israel has every right to defend itself. The truth, of course, is exactly the opposite.
Well, yes, and you're talking about, you know, the lies that Gaza is a terrorist organization. There was an absolutely most extraordinary thing in the UK where the chief rabbi, Jonathan Sachs, I think his name is, he did a broadcast. And then after the broadcast, he was speaking, and believe it or not, the microphones were still on. And what he said was, it's all due to Iran. I mean, this is the Gaza crisis, right? All due to Iran. And by doing so, of course, he revealed himself as the most low-class propagandist. He revealed what was truly in his mind as opposed to what he was saying on the program. But this is your Zionist problem idea. They're able to put out it's all due to Iran when Iran has got nothing to do with Hamas. I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, Hamas is Sunni, it's Palestine. There have been issues. I mean, Iran solidly supports. But this particular issue has not been started by Iran. It's been started by the aggressions of Israel, and every decent people know this. But this is the mindset of Jonathan Sachs. Is he supposed to be a decent person? Nothing of the sort. He's a corrupt, perverted, murderous Zionist like the rest of them. And the game they're up to, of course, is smash Hamas, smash Nasrallah and the people in Lebanon, smash Syria apart, and then they can go after Iran. But Stephen, there is a big change coming. The result of this business in Gaza, the Iraqis are absolutely furious. The populations are furious in country after country after country. And even though the Israelis go into Gaza and murder everybody, which is probably what they want to do, I do feel that the build-up of anger and going around, as you say, it's the decline of the newspapers. I do fear that they might try and shut down the internet. I mean, after all, the great upholders of democracy, the USA and the UK and France, they've all been shutting down all of the television outlets for Iranian television. I was on one this morning, and goodness me how it's getting out. It gets out on the internet, but it's been shut down from the satellites, not only UTEL, not on Ofcom, but they've even the AsiaSat has been shutting down. This is the USA preaching democracy, shutting down free speech. I mean, it's not a joke. They will try and shut down and control the internet very, very soon. But there, Stephen, I think they may have bitten off more than they will chew, because that combined with the great ongoing economic collapse, and Obama only got elected because it was a question of the devil and the deep blue sea. People in the USA had no choice but except to pick one or the other. But your unemployment is now 23%, and amongst young people in other groups, in some areas it's at 40 to 45%. The USA is going to be blown apart because there's nothing in its economic and social policy which stands for the mass of people. So let us not get too depressed. As you say, the readership is changing, the viewership is changing, the economic circumstances are changing, and the Middle East is furious. What we have to do is to ensure that you and your colleagues who do a splendid job are promoting positive stuff. And I have to say, Steve, you have connections with people like Veterans Today, don't you, and Gordon Duff. And there is another whole source of marvelously independent, well-informed thinkers and writers. I take my hat off to them.
Well, there are a lot of them, and the sum of them all really gets an awful lot of good information out. A good number of websites post me. You mentioned you were this morning. I guess you were on Press TV this morning.
No. I go on a number of ones. This one was Al Alam. This was Arabic, right? No, I don't speak a word of Arabic, but it works like you. The translator comes across, puts the question to me, I speak, and then they sort of dim my voice, and then the Arabic translation goes straight the way out, and then they continue in Arabic. No, this is a very popular Middle East program. It is one which comes ultimately from Iran, but it's Arabic, and I do a lot of the radio and things there, etc., usually in English, but sometimes with translation.
I have not done an on-air interview on an all-Arabic station or Farsi station, but I've been interviewed online where questions were posed to me, and they were published in Arabic or in Farsi, and a couple of times it was sent to me. I'm not certain if what I got was Farsi or Arabic. It looked pretty much the same to me. I do not speak either one of them, but I was delighted I got a list of questions. It's happened for me maybe four or five times. And if anybody poses questions to me, I absolutely will answer them. I'll do it the same day. I'll try to give them enough comments so that it makes some sense. And twice I used the interview that was sent to me that they transposed, and I wrote my own article based on the interview, and then with a section I added to it, I added more comments that filled out in more detail things that were on my mind that were relevant to the questions that were posed to me, and I love that. Press TV has me on an awful lot. They had me on earlier in the week when Israel began doing the attacks. It was the longest interview I ever had on Press TV.
Yes, I saw it. It was a very, very good, and you very accurately reflected the rage of people at what is in fact happening.
Was that the one with Ralph Schoeneman?
Oh, there was Ralph Schoeneman followed you, I think. In fact,
oh yes,
he was coming in and out, right?
Yes,
but
yes.
He only had a short thing. But you had a very long go.
Oh, he was on for about an hour and 10 minutes, and they wanted me to stay. I had another interview, Rodney. I had to sign off.
Yes, but just very quickly on Al Alam and some of the others. These are not organized ones where you even know what the question is. Is that these are fly by your pants interviews, and of course upholding tradition, they ensure that there's somebody of the other side right comes on. So you usually get say a member of the Bahraini government, but frankly they are refusing to come on these programs now because they are revealed as what can you, disgusting creatures, representing only themselves, representing only force. Their day is over, Stephen, and you're doing great work, and I do congratulate you. Your Press TV work is well known, and so are your articles. So you're getting there, Stephen. You're actually getting the message out.
Well, I'm trying to, Rodney. Press TV is wonderful. I urge people who listen to this program, you can get Press TV online. I do not let a day go by without monitoring the news on Press TV, and they'll put up fresh information. There's a report circulating, by the way, on Press TV. I want to see something covered in video to get some video evidence, but the report was that Palestinians in Gaza shot down an Israeli F-16 and captured captured two Israeli pilots. Well, if they have these pilots, put them on TV. Let people see them, prove that you did it. Israel denied the report. If it's true, get them on television, show it. But Press TV really is wonderful. They'll get good people on. They give you free rein to speak your mind. I speak as freely on Press TV as I do on this program, and they keep inviting me back again and again, and they have you on often as well, Rodney. I've seen you give wonderful interviews on Press TV.
Yes, you mentioned this part. Yes, there have been extensive reports. Just very quickly on Press TV, you, of course, the whole thing is up. It's either www.presstv.ir or presstv.com, you see. And you're getting updates and articles going through all the way throughout the day. Yes, they were reporting that two pilots have been captured. But the point there is that it would appear that now that Hamas is being attacked, they do have some sort of defensive capacity. And what is more, their homemade missiles are getting through the so-called Iron Dome defensive shield of Israel. Israel started this, but Israel has admitted that only one-third of the Hamas homemade missiles has been actually stopped. So you want to think that if Israel wants to have war with Iran, Iran has promised 150,000 missiles will go on to Israel. And of that, you can just say, well, even on the Israeli figures, they'll only anticipate, well, they couldn't possibly stop 50,000 of them. They haven't got the batteries or anything. They would stop at best about 5,000. So they get 145,000 missiles going down. And that will be the price. But you see, the Israeli game is not that they will fight a war by themselves against Iran. Their idea is that they will immediately ensure that one of their missiles hits an American ship and that the Americans will come in on their side. Once again, it's Israel playing them. They are the murderers, and they do it either directly themselves, or they control American policy, or they trick America into it. 9/11 was a piece of trickery by those Israel, and yes, they are on the line for 3,000 murderers. And Stephen, increasingly it is being said that people in high places in the USA know this. But, of course, they fear for their lives. But the first one who breaks it open, it's actually been suggested that if Obama wants to go down in history, he should, in fact, blow the truth on 9/11. Though, of course, he might well get assassinated. At the same time, that would confirm the truth of the matter. But I won't go into that, Stephen.
I don't think he's got the backbone to do that or anything close to it.
No.
I must say a couple of things, Rodney. If Hamas or another group in Gaza brought down an Israeli F-16, they have something a lot more sophisticated than homemade rockets to be able to do that. That is no small feat. And if they have two Israeli pilots, they have bargaining chips on their hands.
Corporal Galich, isn't it? He was from whenever it was. Was it 2006?
Indeed.
5 years that
yes,
he was
yes.
imprisoned in Gaza. And for his exchange, something like 1,000 people were released, something like that, were released from Israeli prisons. People have been put in solitary confinement. I mean, the Israelis are good at torturing people in various ways, just as the Americans do when they put Muslims into prison, put them into solitary confinement and just try and break them, not just physically, but try and break them psychologically. Yes, so those two prisoner pilots, if they have been captured, will in fact, well, they will become a bargaining chip as long as the Gaza is able to hold them for sufficiently long.
Rodney,
that would be a good idea.
Let me put this thought to you. I'm curious what you might think. The anger in the region and beyond, I know there have been many hundreds of protests across Europe, in North America. I think in America alone there have been hundreds of protests.
Yes.
In Canada, I imagine in other countries, maybe in Latin America to some extent, probably not as much, but there is a lot of world outrage about what Israel is doing. On my mind is whether might there be some people in Israel in high places that have some grave second thoughts on just how far they should go. They're not going to stop what they're doing, but might they revise – their more aggressive plans for something a little bit more muted, and maybe pull back and not pull the real Castlet 2. And I've written Castlet 2 on steroids. Possibly, well, could that happen?
Well, you know, one can always look at little straws in the wind. Just last week, there was a resolution to maintain in the United Nations sanctions against Cuba. And three countries only voted to maintain them. They were the USA, Israel, and a country, Stephen, I bet you've never heard of. You can win the bet if you like, and I will give you a sugar-free peppermint. Palau, which consists of a few islands in the middle of the Pacific. I've never heard of it. Anyway,
well, I was going to say a small Pacific island, but what the name of it would be, I wouldn't know.
Anyway, you know how they get the vote of a country like that. They get hold of the prime minister and they offer them the bribe, or they blackmail them, or they say, you will take the bribe, or your daughter or your son has a cut road accident. That's how the USA does it.
Oh,
but
indeed.
To my utter amazement, Canada did not vote with them. And so on this extraordinary vote in the United Nations on Cuban sanctions, I was absolutely astounded. They virtually all, except for three, and one of them doesn't count, they all voted against. Now, I do believe that could be a sign of the times. The non-aligned movement, which I admit consists of Saudi Arabia's in there, but people are waking up, Stephen, and I do believe that there are people in high places. That's not to say that they can necessarily show their hand, but you can't go on as we are at the moment. The Israeli policy is a dead end. American policy supporting all these autocrats and killers is a dead end. It's the same as UK policy is a dead end. But the trouble is, they're so stupid, they can't see what the tide of history is. Today with the internet, it is possible that you'll get a sudden... Israel may have bitten off more than it can chew. It can win militarily. But politically, you know, politically... Some of these regimes in the Middle East may feel that they're going to have to do something like maybe putting an oil embargo on Israel, because if they don't, the internal political forces inside will increase even more. So, yes, I think you're right. I think that there are signs that things could go, and we shouldn't be too depressed about this, even though we're angry about the mutilations. With these dime bombs, aren't they? Have a peculiar ability to sort of slice people, not just blast them apart, but to actually slice them.
Yes.
Do you know understand
yes.
that, Stephen?
Yes. Yeah. It's been a while since I've written about them, but I have. I'll throw one more thing in as well, Rodney, before the hour ends. I wrote about the Petraeus sacking. He didn't resign. He was sacked. In 2010, he appeared before a House and Senate committees, and he expressed very, very sharp words about Israel. Basically, what he said in a nutshell was, there are times when Israeli interests and American interests do not coincide, and at those times, America should go with what's good for America, not with Israel. The Anti-Defamation League, the second oldest Zionist organization in America, went absolutely bonkers and blasted him. If there was one reason above all the others that I think Petraeus was sacked, it was because he took on the Israeli lobby. But what it shows is that there are people in high places, even a neocon like Petraeus, who thinks Israeli policy does not all the time serve America, and we shouldn't be lock, stock, and barrel in line with what they want. If he feels that way, you can bet you there are other people in Washington that feel the same way.
Yes, indeed. And I'm sure that the information of the affair was used to sack him for that reason. But, Stephen, there have also been some other mysterious sackings at the top of the American military. And it's beginning to look is that they are being sacked because they were possibly trying a coup or something against Obama. There's some very mysterious things. So I think there's a lot of movement going on in the American military, but my overall feeling is that it's a sort of the decent people who are starting to surface. Petraeus, a very ambitious man. One can't have too much sympathy for him. But he got caught simply because, look at the other aspect of it. American policy is being revealed as being shooting yourself in the foot. I mean, they were hiding up the Benghazi business, weren't they? The American ambassador got killed because the Americans provided the machine guns and the rifle brigade rockets and all the rest of it, with which was used then to kill the American ambassador. American policy is all over the place, and a lot of people are realizing this. And the only way you're going to resolve it, Stephen, is if you say, we will go solidly for democracy, and we will go against all corrupt regimes. That will also mean going against the UK regime and the USA regime. But that's the only way forward, Stephen.
It is the only way forward. It's a very ugly situation. Ordinary people are harmed so much, whether they're Palestinians, whether they're Gazans, really getting the brute force of what's going on now. But ordinary people in Europe, across America, this so-called austerity, it's causing so much misery, economic misery to ordinary people, where they lose the basics they need to sustain themselves. And the Congress wants to cut more, and European governments want to cut more. They want to hammer ordinary people. There have been mass protests across Europe. There'll be more in America. There is an end game to this, Rodney. And these policies simply cannot go on forever.
At some
point, push will come to shove.
Exactly. They cannot go on forever. There are more and more informed people. And the bankruptcy of these policies, that they all believe that everything will come back to normal. They're right. They don't see that the situation is fundamentally flawed, fundamentally corrupt, infected by Zionism, anti-democratic. And when the people rise, and they are beginning to rise, particularly for economic reasons,
Absolutely. There
was going to be a huge change.
Ordinary people have more power than they realize if they'll only use it, and I'm not talking about committing violence. Mass opposition, sustained, lots of productive, nonviolent ways. The politicians may be deaf, dumb, and blind, but they're not that deaf, dumb, and blind. They can't ignore the voice of the street when it's sustained and powerful enough, and that's the way to bring about change. It's happened before. It's happened in America. I say it all the time on this program. It can happen again. It will happen again. It's up to us. We can make it happen. Rodney, many, many thanks. I look forward to getting you back next month. I hope you'll be in the UK next month. Will you be traveling? Or
well,
will
I've
you
got
be
an
home?
Invitation on the, I think it's the 12th and 13th, to go to Beirut, right in the thick of it, okay? But that may or may not come off. Just invite me, and I'll always reply by email.
Okay, well, if you go to Beirut, we can do it from there, if you're able to do it.
I don't know the precise detail. But
I'll send you an email
okay.
As soon as I get off. I have another interview coming up. I'm waiting for word on that, and we'll be talking about Gaza. Again, Roddy, many, many thanks. And do join us tomorrow. We'll have another program. We'll talk more about this, whatever the latest developments are, and other things with my guest. Make it a regular habit.